Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Raven's Real Spill. This is your girl, Raven the Serial Poet, coming to bring to y'all another day of 31 Days of Horror. If you have made it to this day, it is day 10, and you are braver than I thought, because I have gotten so many inboxes. Some of y'all haven't been able to finish the earlier episodes, and that's cool. You know, ease yourself into it, because everybody can't stand, you know, that screaming and whatever going on in the hotels that I be providing for y'all entertainment. So, if you want to tune in, the number is 914-205-5813. That number is 914-205-5813. I'm not going to hold y'all up. I'm going to let y'all get into it, and I hope y'all enjoy.
First, so I'm here to post about a dream that I've been having as of lately. I've been having the same dream, and the story is very simple. I am on my laptop at my desk, and my older sister is writing in her diary in her bed, and an extremely tall guy keeps trying to enter our room. He was literally so big that his chest touched the threshold, and I couldn't see his upper shoulder at all. My sister and I knew that he wouldn't be able to come in anyway, so we didn't care about anything and did our own things. He bumped his body trying to come in, then finally gave up a while later and went back. And at that moment, I woke up. But recently, he keeps cutting his body little by little. By the third day, he hadn't been able to come in, but the day before yesterday, he was in front of the door, standing with his ankles. He cut off his foot. Of course, he couldn't come in either, and just yesterday, he cut off half of his calves. His shoulder was seen for the first time, but he has also kept bumping against the door. and this time was no different. What if? What happens to me next if he cuts himself all the way to his knees? Second, it's me again, and I came back to post my recent experience. 2 days later, my worries became a reality. I had a dream again that day, and this time he really cut himself to his knees. I'm not going to explain all the details, but all I could see was his abnormally big mouth, and he was smiling brightly. Then I woke up. I was too scared to go back to sleep after just seeing his face. After that, I gave up on sleeping for a couple of days. I drank all night with my friends, went to a handicraft workshop run by my mom. I was playing on my cell phone for a while and napped for a while, lying down on my mom's lap when I felt too tired. Then I fell asleep, shallowly, on the sofa, and the man was there in my dream as usual. Fortunately, I was able to wake up right away because I didn't sleep deeply. However, being scared, I called my aunt, who was interested in spiritual existence at that time. When I confessed that I was having a hard time because of this, she told me that she knew a shaman and asked me to go there with her. No one believed such a thing because my family were all sincere Christians. My aunt was also a Christian, but she took me to the shaman saying that the method would be much better than just praying. Well, well, I guess these poor little lambs must have been desperate. That day, when I went to see the shaman, she said this to us just as I went inside. When my aunt asked what I should do next, the shaman said, "I'll give you an amulet. Put it on your door." Because we don't know if he was just joking around or doing it for a reason, we have to give it a few more days. Then she continued, "After I came back home with the amulet, I put it on my door without my parents knowing. I fell asleep in my room comfortably for the first time, and there was the man in my dream as I expected, but this time he wasn't standing, just sitting by the door and staring at me. I was inwardly admiring the effect of the amulets when I saw him like that. Just then, he began to imitate my dad's voice. "Lord, please take care of my family and look after my lovely daughters as if they were your eyes." He said a prayer like that almost every day, and while laughing, the man just recited the exact same prayer with my dad. Tears flooded with fear, and whether he thought that it was funny to see me crying, he began to mimic the barking of my dog this time. It was just surprisingly the same. He would scratch the door and whine when I closed my door to study, and the man made the same sound, scratching his fingernails on the door. The next was the voice of my friend. The moment I heard his voice, I was so scared and creeped out. Eventually, I could wake up shortly afterwards while I was crying in my dream. I called my aunt right away, and we went back to the shaman again. And I think we have to raise our prayer to God and do some exorcism sooner or later. I have been awake since that day. Of course, I've been eating my meals normally, but I kept losing weight because of a lack of sleep. I was going crazy. I'm still terrified, even when posting this right now. If anyone has experienced the same thing as me, please, please help me out.
My name is Mark, and this happened when I was 13 years old. It was a normal day in the morning, as usual. I was heading to school with some of my friends. We were just talking about several topics, such as school life or about the girls, you know. Then all of a sudden, I heard someone whispering. "Guys, did you hear that?" I asked, and one of my friends said, "Yeah, what the heck?" When I looked around, I realized that the voices were coming from the bushes, which were kind of far away from where we were standing. I ended up thinking that it might be some students who were trying to play pranks on somebody else. So we ignored them and walked toward the school. What a peaceful and boring day, I thought. Everything was going so normal until that incident. When we were in class, I suddenly heard another whisper under the window. I know that it was just a coincidence, but I started to get a weird feeling, thinking about the whispering from the bushes that I'd heard in the morning. However, I ignored it again, hoping it would be nothing. A few hours later, one of my friends got a stomach problem, so he had to go to the bathroom real badly. He got permission from the teacher and rushed to the bathroom in a hurry. However, he didn't come back for a long time, which was kind of weird. Maybe he fell into the toilet, another friend next to me chuckled. About 5 minutes later, the teacher told me to go check to see what was wrong with him. I went to the bathroom alone, and when I was about to go in, I quickly smelled a terrible stench. Smells like blood. It was apparent that something was wrong. But then, I was being careless to find out what it was. I took one step inside and asked, "Dude, is everything okay?" But there was no answer in the restroom. I slowly started to open each of the stall doors, and then I found him, all bloody in the last stall. And I realized that he didn't have one foot. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was about to throw up. He was unconscious. His face looked pale. So I ran to the teacher and explained the situation. He ran to the office counselor, and they immediately called the police and an ambulance. After they had arrived, they took my friend to the hospital, and everybody had to stay inside. We all had feelings of anxiety. The cops searched the restroom, and they finally determined the perpetrator to be a serial killer who was wanted at the time. Then something came across my mind. I ran to the police and explained to them about whispers that I had heard in the woods and under the window. The police immediately went into the woods, searched the whole area extensively, and found a hut. To our surprise, they found another four corpses inside. After that, they still couldn't find the murderer, and this incident has left everybody in our town shivering in fear. And my friend eventually lost his ankle, but his life was saved, though. I'm just glad that he was saved. And think about what would have happened to him if I hadn't gone to the bathroom to check on him.
I grew up in Bradford, Pennsylvania. Have any of you ever heard of Zippo lighters? They're from here. A thick forest surrounds the town, along with most of the neighborhoods. My family lives sort of on the outskirts of Bradford. Of course, much like the town itself, our house was also surrounded by forest. If you took in the scene from our back porch, you would see nothing but sprawling trees for miles. I tell you this so you can gain a sense of isolation. Out at my house, you could scream at the top of your lungs, and no one would come to help you. This happened back in the summer of 1996. I was 11 years old at the time. I had a childhood friend named Marty, who was the same age. Our fathers worked together and knew each other well. He would come over almost every Friday to hang out. Marty and I found ourselves hiking through the trees, as we often did. However, we were feeling a bit daring, and went further into the forest than we usually did. There was this barrier of trees that we would never go past, simply because I didn't know the area beyond that point. We continued past the barrier into uncharted territory. We eventually came upon a clearing. In the middle of this clearing was an old, disheveled-looking tent. Being the curious young men we, of course, had to see inside. As we approached, I could feel the temperature around me drop. I'm no stranger to the cold, but this was in the middle of summer. Even at my age, I could sense that there was something truly sinister inside this tent. A part of me was screaming to hightail it out of there, but my own curiosity pushed me forward. We both stopped just outside the tent, and suddenly, we were both too frightened to move any further. We were both frozen in place, staring at the open flap of the tent as it swayed from side to side. The sky seemed to grow even darker since we discovered this tent, and though we were standing directly in front of it, we could not see inside. What happened next is the reason that I still struggle with alcoholism. A dark hand slowly emerged from the tent's opening. It reached out to us, with long black nails protruding out from its fingertips. I'm not ashamed to admit that I pissed myself out of fear. The hand slowly turned and made a beckoning gesture with its index finger. And that's when Marty and I heard a deep, bellowing laughter from inside the tent. I don't remember much about what happened after that. I just remember me and Marty running for our lives, tearing through the woods and back to my house. I do have a vague memory of me briefly looking behind me as I ran, to see a tall, dark, and human figure standing just outside the tent. Upon returning, Marty immediately called his mom to come pick him up. My mother asked us what was wrong, and we both explained to her that we saw some kind of creature in the forest. My mother ultimately dismissed our claims, but led us in a prayer while we waited for Marty's mom to arrive. Marty never came back after that, and we sort of drifted apart. Sadly, Marty began hanging out with the wrong crowd and began doing hardcore drugs when he was around 14. He ended up hanging himself in his bedroom when he was 17. As for myself, I suffered from severe night terrors that tormented me for years after that day in the woods. I'm not going to get into what I experienced in my nightmares, but I will say that I became an alcoholic as a result. After moving far away and attending numerous AA meetings, I'm glad to say that I've turned my life around, and I even have a family of my own. I still visit Bradford every now and again to check in on my aging parents. Whenever I'm there, I always set flowers on Marty's grave. I'm still convinced that what we saw that day in the woods contributed to his death. Now that I have some perspective, I think what Marty and I encountered was a demonic presence. It followed us home and proceeded to turn both of our lives upside down. There were rumors of people worshiping Satan out there in those woods around the mid to late 90s. Perhaps they awakened something, and Marty and I just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
This is a story that my friend actually experienced. My friend had a habit of sleeping with both arms stretching over his head as if he were doing a hurrah. One day, he was sleeping in that same position as usual. However, suddenly, he couldn't move his body. There was a big window by his bedside, and because it was summer, he was sleeping with the windows wide open. All of a sudden, he could see a woman through the window. Her face looked kind of weird, as if she wasn't a human at all. The woman with a creepy face pulled my friend's arm violently. At that moment, he saw her mouth had almost ripped up to her ears. She gave the most horrifying loud laugh when she pulled his arm, and my friend, who was struggling, was soon released from his sleep paralysis. When I came to my senses, there was a thick bruise on both of my arms. With handprints, he said. I live in the countryside, and there was a pretty famous reservoir in our area. One evening, one of my father's friends drove me home in a car, and we were just passing through that area. All of a sudden, a woman softly walking into the reservoir caught my eye. I couldn't see her face, but she had black clothing covering it. And she just went into the reservoir in the blink of an eye. My dad's friend next to me also saw the figure, and at that moment, neither of us could say anything. Then he stepped on the gas like a crazy man. After arriving home, he made sure I went inside the house and even said to me to not forget to check the door before I go to bed. Not long after, the broadcasting authorities came to the reservoir with some famous celebrities to shoot some kind of TV program. And seeing those celebrities falling into the reservoir somehow made me sick. I have no idea if the person I had seen that day was a person or a ghost. But after that, there are always 4 people who die there every year. When I was young, there was an accident where one of my older sister's classmates slipped on ice while playing and died of a concussion. Her friend's name was Billy. A few years later, my mom suddenly brought up the story about Billy to my sister while we were staying at home. "Hey, do you guys remember the kid who died of a concussion? Your friend, Billy?" Then I heard someone abruptly knocking on our front door. The apartment where I lived had a hallway with several houses side by side, but the hallway was kind of old, so the sound of people walking around outside seemed very loud. Furthermore, there wasn't a sign of anyone that day, but someone had just knocked on my door. My mom, my sister, and I stood at the back without saying anything to each other, thinking something was wrong. The constant knocking continued, and my mom finally answered, "Who is it?" Then someone from outside said, "Is Billy here? Is Billy here? Is Billy here?" It was a woman, and she asked these three same questions in a very dry voice. "No, he's not here." When my mom said it like this, it became quiet outside. And when I looked through the peephole, she was already gone. I couldn't even hear the sound of footsteps. To this day, I still wonder who she was.
I am an immigrant from Belarus. English is not my first language, so I apologize if I phrase things differently. Here's some backstory. I was only 11 when my family left the country after the collapse of the Soviet Union. My father was involved with the Communist Party and would frequently visit Moscow when I was a boy. I don't know all the details. I don't even know what exactly my father's role was in the USSR. But from what I understand, we were granted asylum in the United States and had to flee Belarus in 1991. But that's not really why I'm writing this story. This is about something I saw in my childhood that has scarred me for life. This took place roughly a year before we left, so I'm guessing the year was 1990. My family, like many others, lived in a massive apartment building in Minsk. There were two other identical apartment buildings adjacent to ours, and directly behind the buildings was a playground area where I would play with my friends Sasha and Victor. Beyond the playground was a section of trees that separated a shopping plaza from the apartment grounds. I remember that my mother was feeling ill and was bedridden, and my father was away on business in Moscow, so I was pretty much on my own that night. I remember that I had gotten bored watching TV in the living room and decided to go outside and see if any of my friends were at the playground. I would say this was around 8 p.m., and it was dark out. By then, most of the children were inside, and I don't even think anyone was allowed on the playground at that time, but I didn't care. There was no one around to tell me to go back inside, and I was pretty excited to have the playground all to myself. It was chilly out that night, but it was not snowing, so I figured that I would play on the slides and swing set until I either got bored or if security came along and told me to go back inside. So there I was, just swinging in the dark, when I heard something near the fence that separated the trees from the playground. It was a strange noise, like someone was sawing wood, but there was something just off about it. I ignored the sound, but it became louder as time passed, to the point where I became curious as to what was causing this strange noise. There were no lights at the playground itself, but there were lights mounted to the back of the apartment buildings that illuminated things just enough to where you could see your surroundings. But the trees beyond the fence were pitch black. I got off the swing set and approached the edge of the playground. The sound continued getting louder, even as I got up right to the fence. It wasn't until I let out a curious, "Hello?" that the noise ceased. I stood there staring into the dark trees, waiting for a response, but all remained silent. After about another minute passed, I innocently asked, "Why are you chopping down trees in the dark?" I then heard a shuffling from within the trees, and soon, I saw a dark figure come into view, but did not step out from the tree line. What happened next is something that still makes me want to vomit out my insides. The dark figure then threw something. The object flew over the fence and hit me directly in the chest. I was knocked backwards, more out of surprise than the actual force of the impact.
"Hey, why'd you do that?"
I shouted. But before I could get another word out, I caught a glimpse of what had been thrown at me. A severed human arm was lying on the ground in front of me. I screamed at the top of my lungs and ran back towards the apartments, bawling my eyes out. I stormed into our apartment and sat on the living room couch to collect myself. I did think about waking my sick mother and telling her about what happened, but decided against it. To give you some perspective, my mother grew up in Siberia, and she could be quite ruthless at times. Not only would she not be too happy about being woken up, but she most likely wouldn't believe my story. And I probably wouldn't be able to sit down for a week if she found out I left the apartment alone after dark. So I kept this incident to myself. As a child, I understood that what happened was scary, but I had no grasp of the implications. I thought there was a monster in the woods who ate people who came out after dark. Now that I'm an adult, there are some things that I've come to realize. For our remaining time in Belarus, I never saw or heard any kind of investigation regarding a missing person or a mutilated body being discovered, which is nothing out of the ordinary living in Soviet society. The monster in the woods, hiding in the trees that night, was most likely a sadistic madman, dismembering a human body with a hacksaw. There is one more thing that I should mention. For the rest of the time that we lived there, I cannot for the life of me recall ever seeing my friend Sasha again after that night.
Last year, I had a classmate who didn't like to socialize. I was the only one who spoke to her. One day, she messaged me an article about cat abuse, knowing that I had a cat. I replied to her, saying, "Wow, that's literally insane." She then started pretending she was close to me and continued to send articles about cat abuse or pictures of dead, such as road-killed cats. Feeling uncomfortable, I slowly began to avoid her. And one day, I suddenly felt like she took a picture of me. While she left her seat, I decided to secretly check her cell phone. Surprisingly, the phone was not locked, so I could easily enter her photo gallery. And then, what I saw was horribly shocking. There were over 80 photos of me that I didn't even know she took. I got goosebumps when I saw the folder's name. It had my name. And there was one more folder, Cat, which contained pictures of dead bodies and the several articles that my friend had sent me. This story is about my friend's sister. The friend's family was living in a large apartment complex. One day, his sister went out, and this incident happened at that moment. Her ex-boyfriend, who was waiting for her, hit her on the head with a piece of sidewalk block and just killed her. The security ran towards them in surprise, but he ran away, went up to the roof of another apartment complex, and killed himself on the spot. After that, there were two memorial altars set up for both the woman and the man. And ironically, they were located right next to each other. And meanwhile, the bereaved family of the man insisted on this. They told my friend's family, "Let's join their souls in marriage." My friend's parents panicked, so they eventually fought with the bereaved family of the man, cursing at them. He told me later that everyone in the memorial altar went crazy that day. One of my teachers told us about a dream she had. She had a dream about 3 or 4 years after her grandfather passed away. In her dream, it was raining hard, and her grandfather, who completely got wet, tried to pass his socks to my teacher. Even though she loved him very much, she kept refusing because she didn't want to receive them for some reason. Then suddenly, the view abruptly changed, and my teacher was in the car. She was driving through a very big tunnel. At some point, she started dozing off, pressed on the brakes, and then woke up. She thought it was just a strange dream at first. Another day, she was driving in a car with her husband. She usually doesn't sleep when she's in the car, but she started dozing off in the front passenger seat on that day. When she woke up, she found that the place they were passing through was the same big tunnel she saw in her dream, and her husband was falling asleep next to her as well. Being startled, she immediately woke her husband up, and they returned home safely. She suddenly remembered her dream, so she visited an expert to get any advice on dream interpretation. And the story goes like this. When you receive an item from a person who passed away, then you will die. Anyway, my teacher soon forgot about it for several years, until 7 years had passed. That day was the day they were going to change the place of her grandfather's grave, and the moment when they opened his coffin, they could see his wet body was floating in water. The strange thing was that the flesh had not yet rotted. She could see that the body had a bit of volume. She ended up thinking that her grandfather, who had been standing in the rain in a dream, might have wanted her to know of his current condition. However, this wasn't the only surprise. It turned out that it wasn't only her. Other relatives had the same dream. This isn't a scary story, but I've been the clumsy type ever since I was a child, so accidents used to happen a lot. And once I almost died. I was the girl who really loved animals, so without thinking, I walked onto a road where cars were moving crazy fast. I didn't put much thought into the things I did when I was a child. However, as soon as I stepped in, I heard several voices coming from behind me.
Watch out!
Surprised, I fell backward and fortunately wasn't on the road. But when I looked back, there was no one behind me. My big brother was there, and with a tearful voice he said, "Hey, what if you got hurt? You shouldn't let go of my hand." My brother came out of the store and ran towards me right away. So that must mean that my brother was the only one who called out to me at that moment. However, I then heard dozens of people calling out to me, yelling, "Watch out." Not long ago, the movie theater I was at was crowded with people when the movie Parasite came out. Maybe it was because that film just won a big prize, called the Palme d'Or. There were a lot of people in the theater, even though it was daytime on a weekday. So I entered the theater a little late that day, and the other people had already sat down in their seats. The seat I picked at that time was somewhere in the middle, probably the 8th row from the center of the screen in the front. Anyway, after the movie began, all I could hear was someone's breathing next to me. I was watching it in a relatively quiet atmosphere, as this movie was for adults, but suddenly, something strange under the screen caught my eye. The space between the front of the screen and the first row of seats is usually carpeted and empty. And there, I had no idea whether it was a woman or a man, but the person with disheveled hair was crawling on the floor on all fours. He was wriggling on the floor, attaching his stomach. At that moment, I thought that someone might have fallen there or was hurt at first. So I looked around with anxiety, but to my surprise, none of those people showed any response. What is it? Is he drunk? Is that why they're ignoring him? I could see that no one around me reacted, so I was also unable to move. And in the middle of the movie, there was a scene where one of the family members broke into the house after another family had left, and they started to drink alcohol and eat food in the living room. The sound of rain was so vivid, and all of a sudden, that unknown thing suddenly raised its head straight up in the air. He had been dragging his whole body to the floor until a moment ago. However, he then stood, waist up, straightened his chest, and started to look around the seats like crazy. I don't know if he saw me or just around me, but he turned his head towards where I was sitting. At that moment, me and that thing were looking at each other. Because of its messy hair, its eyes were blinded, and I could only see around its nose and mouth. As soon as I saw it, a thought suddenly came to my mind. Is that a human? Feeling uncomfortable, I intentionally turned my eyes towards the screen to avoid it. And this time, it looked up with its face and started to stare at the audience from under the center of the screen. On the wall under the screen, it was now completely standing straight with its upper body visible and looking right this way. I couldn't see his face well because of his hair, but soon after, it was finally shown, reflected by the light coming out of the projector. Only then did I begin to see a little bit of the middle of its face, and it was laughing, almost tearing its mouth, and its eyes were abnormally big and wide. I almost screamed for the first time. Its face was so gross that I almost threw up at that moment. So I picked up my bag quickly and started running down the stairs, thinking I should leave the cinema as soon as possible. I looked towards the screen as I went down the stairs, and it was staring at me, turning its head slightly. The movie theaters usually have different locations between the entrance and the exit. I guess they locked the exit, which was close to the seats until the end of the movie. No matter how hard I tried, it didn't open. Even though it was such a crowded place, it was like I was trapped. I could have come out through the entrance, but I was not in my right mind at that moment. But just then, I knew instinctively that something was wrong. It was approaching my back. What should I do now? I then turned around with my eyes closed and ran frantically from the exit to the opposite entrance. Fortunately, the entrance door was open. When I came out, I could see the audience waiting and the part-timers in front of me. And as soon as I came out the main street from the theater, the creepy sensation quickly disappeared. However, whenever I saw videos relating to parasites on TV or the internet, its smiling face under the screen of the theater came up in my mind and distressed me, and I eventually couldn't watch that movie at all after that. When I was in elementary school, I had a friend who lived right next door. We used to go to school together all the time. One day, I was standing in front of my friend's house waiting for her as usual, and I realized that she was kind of strange when she came out. She looked kind of bemused. To more closely, she was breaking out in a cold sweat. Feeling something strange, I asked my friend what was going on, and she started telling me a story about her dream. She started to dream the same dream she had from long ago. A kind-looking old lady always comes out in her dreams, and she cooks meals for her and then she eats it all. My friend had a lot of conversations with her because she gave her such a good impression. The most amazing thing was when she woke up, she felt full as if she had actually eaten, even though it was just a dream. My friend lived alone with her maternal grandmother at the time, but on another day when my friend was about to go to school, she repeatedly requested one thing from her with a scary face. Do not follow the stranger or anyone today, okay? Do not. My friend was confused for a moment, but reassured her grandmother, telling her not to worry, and then went to school. However, nothing happened all day. And that night, she fell asleep, and the old lady appeared in her dream as usual and made her a meal. She was enjoying her meal and all of a sudden, the old lady asked my friend to go somewhere with her. She held the old lady's hand and tried to follow her thoughtlessly. However, she then remembered what her grandmother said to her in the morning, so she let go of her hand and refused to go. Then she saw her face turn scary at that moment. The old lady suddenly grabbed the back of my friend's neck and began to drag her somewhere, and no matter how hard she tried to escape, she wouldn't budge at all. While she was trembling with fear, she then remembered the other thing that her grandmother had told her in the morning. If you're dragged by someone in your dreams, don't panic. Just slam your head against somewhere, like a wall or a pillar. Then you will wake up from your dream. Understand? My friend, who remembered the advice, saw a tree in front of her and tried to hit her head. But suddenly, the old lady laughed as she pulled my friend's head. Who taught you this? Oh, I see. Your grandmother did. So she failed to wake up and was being dragged away from her dream. And the old lady's cane suddenly caught her eye. At that moment, she bumped her head with all her strength on the stick and then finally woke up from her dream. I got goosebumps listening to my friend, since it was early in the morning. Anyway, my friend, who had been absent-minded all day, started skipping school the following day. I was worried about her, so I went to her house, but the door didn't open, and she didn't answer the phone. A month later, my friend called me, and she asked me to come over to her house. With curiosity, I ran to her house, and when I saw her again, she looked emaciated, and the atmosphere around her was quite different. Most of all, she kept laughing to herself like crazy. She dragged me into the house, took me to a room, and said this, "Hey, you see my granny? She's crazy." Then she began to giggle more, and I unconsciously turned my eyes to the room. Her grandmother, looking into the air continuously, was begging desperately in a small, tiny room without a beam of light. Her face seemed afraid of something, and she kept muttering the same words. "I didn't teach her. That was not me. Please, I'm sorry. I'm sorry." Later, I heard that her grandmother had passed away shortly after, and my friend has been hospitalized because of the shock. Come to think of it now, wasn't the food she always ate in her dreams a meal for her grandmother, who would die soon?
About 10 years ago, my family had a studio rental business in a big city. Our studio had the most thorough security system at that time. So as a result, our studio became the best place for those parents who ever wanted to send their daughter from the rural area to the city. Even though the rent price was highly expensive, our studio was always traded. And because of that, the gender ratio of women was far higher. At that time, there was a woman who had moved into our studio for about 3 months. She was the kind of annoying type that she requested changing the automatic door lock's password several times a month. There was a manual in the room that helped you to change the password for oneself, but she kept asking us to do it every time, saying that it was complicated. We felt like she was the type who was going to fuss about our studio someday, so we always did her favor whenever she asked. But one day, she started saying something strange. She said that someone seemed to be coming inside of her room when she wasn't there. Of course, we have a master card to enter every room, but I swear, we are not those ignorant types of owners who come in and go out of any room, except for sometimes when people who leave their rooms without telling us they had changed the password, or when we had to do an electrical inspection for the empty rooms, asking for prior consent already. But she seemed to doubt me, because I was the one who guarded the studio during my university vacation. Anyway, my parents sent her back to her room kindly, saying that she might be mistaken at first. Then the other day, she came up angrily this time. She said that she put a piece of paper in the crack of the door and folded the edge of the bed's blanket slightly when she went out. However, when she came back again, then she found that the paper was fallen on the ground and the blanket was all spread out. Cursing me tremendously, she had already believed 100% that I was certainly the criminal. At the time, I was ordering food and in a good mood after cleaning the roof in a heavy sweat, and this woman's behavior slowly pissed me off. And even my parents seemed to be suspicious of me at this point. But I couldn't confirm what was happening on each floor because there was only one CCTV in the front door and another one in the parking lot at that time. No matter how I felt the unfairness, I couldn't just install all the CCTV using a huge sum of money to capture the evidence of the woman who has such a megalomania and mythomania. So I put a digital camera that had very low resolution at that time in a beverage box and put it in a hallway where she was living. I had to go down every 2 hours and empty the memory, and I finally ended up thinking that I wouldn't be able to do this anymore after about 3 days. On the fourth day, the incident happened. That day, the police knocked on our door first. Following them, when I looked inside the woman's room, I could see the pearl-like eyeshadow was spread on every side of the walls. It turned out that the woman had coated the doorknob with cosmetics when she went down to her hometown for a few days, hoping the criminal to leave a trace when he broke into her room. But as if he were mocking her, the criminal had put those pearl shadows all over the walls, ceilings, and even floors of the room. So the police came to my room after receiving the woman's report. They started to investigate whether they could find any traces of pearl shadow on my keyboard, mouse, drawer handle, faucet, and even the toilet watering lever. But it was nonsense. I was just eating delivery food without knowing anything. The wash basin in the woman's room, which had been empty for 4 days, was completely wet, as if someone had just finished taking a shower, and I could see the soap was expanded. I was eventually called to the police station as a witness for questioning. When I finally got back home, I brought my camera that I had installed before to see what was on it, just in case. And then, something strange was caught in the camera. On the second night, around 11 p.m., the woman's boyfriend was filmed entering that empty room. He wasn't in the video for the third day, and of course I couldn't film it for the fourth day. It was a suspicious thing. In the end, I went to the police station again with my camera and submitted it. The whole story of the incident that was revealed later was like this. It was her boyfriend who made her terrorized and tremble in an attempt to bring her into his studio. While she went to college, he kept sneaking into her room and left those suspicious traces for a month. Then, as his girlfriend noticed the strangeness, she told him what had happened, and he kept telling her about the cruel and scary murdering cases that occurred in a studio apartment. Later, he suggested to her that she could sleep in his house if she was scared. His final goal was cohabitating with a woman, and the climax happened on that day. After hearing that she had set up a trap at the door, he entered her room and rubbed the pearl shadows on the whole room more than she did. Of course, the sink, the blanket, and the paper between the doors, everything was all by him. He thought that if his girlfriend felt extreme fear, she would end up living with him. What was even more creepy was that when the police came to our studio that day, he was comforting his girlfriend calmly, hugging her in his arms. The more she got afraid, the more courteously that bastard consoled her and kept thinking about how he could make her scared on the other hand. In the end, the man was accused by the woman and her family, and the woman took time off from school due to the huge shock. There's something I want to confess about. So I'm going to write it down on this anonymous site. I'd like to talk about one thing I really, really did wrong. When I was in elementary school, I had to ride my bike to school because there was some distance from my house to my school. My house was located in a back alley. And one day on my way home, I was riding my bike around the curve and I couldn't slow down. So I ran over an old lady. She collapsed, passing out. And I rushed back to my house, being terrified. She was a very kind person in my town. She was close to my family and people in the neighborhood. so she always greeted me kindly whenever she saw me. Back then, the CCTVs weren't installed around on the streets, so no matter what happened in the alley, there was no way to find out who did it. And the next day, a handwritten poster was attached to the alley wall. "We're finding a witness. My grandmother had an accident. We don't want to believe it, but if the criminal is one of our neighbors, please confess. We don't want strong punishment either. We just want to resolve the injustice." It was written something like this. She returned home shortly after being treated for a concussion, and after that, her health began to deteriorate rapidly because she was quite an old lady. I was afraid that I'd be revealed that I did it, but she didn't seem to remember the incident. Or was she just pretending that she couldn't remember? Anyway, she was always spending time in the same place, enjoying the wind or the sun, and I had to avoid that place where she was. I shouldn't say it like this, but fortunately, I wasn't caught. As time went by, my guilt gradually became dull, and I was living without much thought of it. When I was in high school, she had dementia. And one other day, I was passing by the alley, and I met the old lady again. I greeted her unconsciously. I'm not sure if she had a clear mind or not, but anyway, she smiled at me and said like this, "Oh, hello. So you don't ride your bike anymore?" The cold sweat soaked my back in a brief moment. Without answering, I just ran away, and time passed. The old lady passed away after I became an adult, and there's still the guilt in the corner of my heart. Since I can't tell this story to anyone, I hope you guys understand me using the power of anonymity to write it here. I know, I'm just the most terrible trash in the world.
My family is a small farm here in Kirkwood, upstate New York. We grow a few veggies, keep a few chickens, nothing too spectacular, but it's home and we love it. But a little while ago, back in early 2019, we got woken up by something in the middle of the night that scared the absolute life out of us. We have this big front yard with flower beds and a big lawn, and that's where we keep the chickens and the dog, too. So me, my mom, and my dad were all sleeping one night, and we were woken up by this huge crash in the front yard. I can hear our dog barking really, really loud and violently before there's like this yelping sound from it, and he goes quiet. I walk out into the hallway and see my dad storming out of my parents' bedroom, rushing down the stairs to get his shotgun. Me and my mom were about to follow him outside to get a look at whatever was going on, but he yells at us to call the cops, stay inside, and not follow him under any circumstances. My dad grabs the phone and I rush back into my bedroom to watch from the window. As soon as I look out, I see this car that's smashed through the fence of our yard and torn up a section of our lawn. It's obviously really dark out, and the car's headlights are only lighting up a section of our yard, so I can't really see much outside of the beams. But I do see something that absolutely breaks my heart. It's our dog, lying on the front lawn, not moving at all. He looked really hurt. Something had really, really messed him up. But given that he was barking after the actual smash of the car, it couldn't have been the impact that hurt him so bad. Something else entirely. What I saw next was only because my dad had this little light attached to the end of his shotgun. He starts shining it around the front yard as I hear my mom calling 911 in the hallway, telling them that something horrible had happened at our address, and for them to come as quickly as they could. Then my dad shines the shotgun light over towards the chicken coop, and I saw something that I continue to see in my nightmares for a long time to come. It was a man, completely naked from head to toe, kneeling among torn-out feathers and broken bodies, and he was sinking his teeth into the flesh of a still-living chicken that he held tight in his grip. Every time he bit into the chicken, it would flap and shake, making the most awful screeching noises as he tore more raw flesh from its body. My dad racked a shell into the chamber and started screaming at the guy to get out of the chicken coop. But the guy barely listens at first, just carries on ripping this big brown chicken apart with his bare hands and teeth. And by the time he does actually start listening to my dad, God, it was horrible. He looked right into the light of the shotgun so that his face was perfectly lit up, and he smiled. There was blood and feathers all over his face and chin, He looked monstrous, totally insane, eyes bulging out of their sockets. I think even to this day, it's probably the most terrifying thing I'd ever seen. I started banging on the window and begging my dad to come back inside. I was so scared the guy was going to attack him or something, and if he did, that dad would shoot him. And I know it's maybe a little lame of me, but I just didn't want to see any of that. I was already distraught from seeing our dog just lying there all lifeless on the lawn, and I know I wouldn't be able to handle it if anything had happened to my dad. Luckily, the guy didn't bother doing anything to my dad at first. I think he was just so blinded by the light of the shotgun that he just sort of stared into the flashlight, hypnotized by it for a few seconds. But he soon rose up off of his knees, that bloody, twitching chicken still in his grip, and started to make a move towards my dad. As soon as he did, the sound of Dad's shotgun rang out as he fired a shot above the guy's head. But the guy hardly flinched. That's when I realized he must have been on some kind of drug or something, maybe meth or PCP or whatever. He didn't seem scared at all by the fact that he'd almost had his head blown off, but it was definitely enough to put him off from straight up attacking my dad. He just carried on smiling, though, kneeling back down among the chickens as he carried on ripping them apart. It felt like an hour before I finally saw the red and blue flashing lights of the cop cars coming down the road. But from what I learned later, it was only a couple of minutes before they actually arrived, since they happened to have a unit in the area already down highway patrol. When they arrested the guy, he got really, really crazy, and they had to actually use their tasers, which had little effect at first, and pepper spray on the guy just to get him on the ground. We later found out that the guy, named John Menny, was actually from Florida, that there had been a manhunt for him, and he'd somehow gotten all the way up to New York State using stolen cars and hiding himself away in trucks. We weren't the only place he'd attacked either, since he actually killed another dog on a different farm, maybe less than 2 miles away from us. That was definitely the most terrifying thing I'd ever woken up to in the middle of the night, by a long shot too. Thankfully, our dog survived.
This story took place months ago. I had a friend. Let me just call his name as Cheese while I'm telling this story. So whenever Cheese and I got bored in those days, we usually went to the forest to discover new routes and places near our houses. Sometimes we reached a gated property and we entered the property through the forest. It was so much fun to see that the security guard didn't know that we were coming in and going out. However, this incident changed everything. And we never went to another place since that day. One day it was kind of late on that day and we were riding our bike as usual. The sky got darker and darker and we passed through the forest, bushes, and unpaved roads. The forest was so thick that we could hardly see any source of light. Thanks to my mom, she had told me to take my phone with me and I could move forward turning on the flashlight. Then all of a sudden we heard a rustling noise in the bushes. We stopped and both turned our eyes to it. Cheese stared at me with shivering eyes and said, Hey, why don't we just go back? I don't know what gave me the courage to say, but we're almost halfway, I guess. Let's go forward. So we began to move again, riding our bike. But Cheese suddenly stopped and I could see the frightened look on his face. I also stopped at the spot and looked where his eyes were headed. Something was in front of us. My mouth was wide open when I saw an old man standing alone and muttering something. We couldn't hear anything, but we could read his lip movements in the bright light of the fire he set around. Then Cheese pointed his finger at something. I noticed that something was wrong. There were someone's skulls forming a circle around him. You can't imagine how I got terrified at that time. It was impossible for us to run away because the old man was blocking our way. He slowly turned his body toward us and said something like this.
We need some more sacrifice.
Then he pulled out his pocket knife and ran toward us. I knew I had to think fast. Screaming, I took my helmet off and threw it at his face. And Cheese grabbed a big stone on the road and threw it at him at the same time. He dodged my helmet, but fortunately the stone got him accurately. He hit his head hard by the stone and fell down on the road. And we turned our cycles back and drove off as fast as we could without looking back. The next day, we checked that same place, but neither the man nor the circle of skulls remained. We've kept this story secret, but to this day, I always think of the same thing. What would have happened to me if Cheese hadn't thrown that stone at the old man? Who was he, and what was he doing? I have no idea.
When I was 9, I was staying home alone. It was early morning, and I had just gotten out of the shower and brushed my teeth. I put on my favorite outfit, set up a little area in the living room with a drink and a snack, and then turned on the TV to watch something. The phone rang. I went across the house to go answer it. The voice on the other end was, well, really familiar and really comforting for me. He asked me about my day so far, and he made small talk. After about a minute or so, he then said,
"I like your outfit. Is pink your favorite color?"
I replied back with, "Oh, thank you. No, it isn't."
"What were you planning on watching on TV?"
he asked. It took me a few seconds to understand what was happening, as I was only 9 years old and very naive. The voice on the other end of the phone then changed. It became deep and raspy and horrific. The voice then proceeded to describe all these horrible things that they wanted to do to me, and in detail. I went numb. My skin felt as if it were on fire, and my heart was racing. I had never been more terrified in my entire life. I slammed down the phone, and then I called my mom at work. I tried to explain what happened, and I'm not sure I was making much sense. She got on to me for answering the phone, and she told me to go back about my day. I remember trying to explain to her that he was watching me, and that he told me what I had been doing, and that he knew what I was wearing. I also mentioned that I was going to call 911 because I needed help. "That isn't necessary. I'm not coming home. Just don't answer the phone and go watch TV," she said, and then I hung up. I was really confused and I was scared. I could feel his eyes on me. I pulled the curtains closed and I raced around the house, torn between doing what I felt was right and doing what I had been told by my mother. This whole time, the phone was ringing. The second it would stop, it would just start up yet again. The sound of the phone ringing would pulse through my entire body like electricity. It was practically paralyzing me. It was like I was frozen but also on fire at the same time. I waited for a pause in the ringing and called 911. "I'm home by myself and I'm 9 years old and someone's watching me and telling me they're gonna kill me," I told the operator. She tried to keep me calm and she said that she would send help for me. I remember standing there listening to this kind voice just trying to help me, but I could feel every scary movie scenario just playing out behind me. Was he creeping up behind me with a knife? Was he going to shoot me through a window? Was he going to throw a rock through the glass and open the door? I just didn't know. I couldn't breathe and I couldn't feel my body. In a moment of panic, I set off the alarm to the house and ran outside. I remember this sense of relief, but also this overwhelming feeling of having a separation in my reality. The house felt small and dark and really dangerous and cold. Outside felt open, as well as safe and warm. I could hear lawnmowers and the sounds of birds chirping. It was a beautiful break from that bone-chilling feeling of the phone. It was like I was watching a movie and I could see myself experience both of these environments at the same time. A neighbor was pushing his child in a swing. He was concerned. He let me stand next to him and he protected me. I could hear the sirens now, the blaring sound getting louder as they grew closer. It felt like it took an eternity, but the police finally arrived. An officer walked over to me and he asked me what happened. I did my best to explain it, but so many of the words on the phone that were used were just so embarrassing. I couldn't bring myself to use such adult words to a police officer. And his other words were just bone-chilling. I couldn't say those either. To this day, I can still hear my young voice repeating the words. "He was watching me. He said he was going to kill me." Not long after, my mom's car pulled into the driveway. She, for some reason, decided to come home. She didn't look for me or come to speak to me. She just calmly got out and then walked over to the police officer. I was standing in the doorway from the house to the garage just facing the driveway. I could see my mom and the police officer. I was watching and trying to understand, trying to figure out what was happening. Then I saw it. She was laughing. My face was swollen from tears, my heart still racing, and my skin was on fire. And my mom was laughing? What the hell was going on? Very slowly, I crept a little closer, and I then overheard. I'm so sorry about this. I guess she just got scared being home alone and overreacted. I'm really sorry. What the hell's happening? What did I do wrong? Did I imagine this? Was this a dream? Should I not have called 911? Did I actually overreact? My memory of what happened after that is a little hazy. I remember refusing to stay home alone and the sound of the phone ringing just rippling through my body. It wasn't something I liked discussing. I refused to repeat what had been said to me by the voice on the phone. My mom decided that she knew who did it, but she didn't even know the details. There was no investigation. No one was questioned. She told me it was a boy who was the same age as me who lived across the street. I knew that was impossible, but no matter how much I protested it, I was always told that it was him. Many years later, after I was an adult with my own children, we were at Christmas. Everyone was in the living room and I had gone into the back bedroom to change a diaper. As I was walking out of the room and back into the living room, I could hear my mom laughing, her voice as if she had been telling a joke. The faces of everyone else in the room told a different story. Discomfort, anguish, shock, fear, yet she was still laughing. It felt as if I was walking in slow motion. One of my older children had actually stopped me from entering the living room and sort of pushed me back into the room that I had just come out of. She just told the story of you being home alone and the man threatening to kill you. She told it like it was a joke or something, like some funny story from your childhood. My child told me. To this day, I never learned who it was that called me. I deal with my fear of ringing phones and phone conversations on a daily basis. It's awful.
There is a road that I always drive through for work day after day. Although it was a quiet place, I didn't pay much attention to it, as it has always a few cars on the road. However, something started to bother me at some point. There was a man standing on the same side of the road almost every day with no expression. Late at night or early daybreak, it hasn't been long since I noticed he was always in the same place in all weather. So one day, I talked to my colleague about the man, and he suddenly said, "He seemed like a very famous man around that place. But you know what? No matter where you see him, you will always see his face from the front. No one has literally seen his back or even his side. Moreover, there are, strangely, many accidents on that road. So everyone says that's a curse from that dude. For now, everyone just passes him on the road and ignores him." I suddenly became curious about him. That day on my way back home from work, I was driving on the road where the man stood. And the man was standing there as usual and looking straight at me. As I was passing the side of him, I turned my head to see him sideways, but he was already staring at me straight in his face. Now I passed the man and looked into the side mirror to see his back, but still, he was looking at me straight. It made me feel creepy enough. After I arrived at home, another curiosity sprang up. So he kept staring at me, but I couldn't really see him moving. He definitely moved when I just took my eyes off for a moment. Then what happens if I keep staring at the man without taking my eyes off of him? The next day, I headed to the same place. It was time to put the way I thought yesterday into practice. And he surely stood in the same places, staring straight at me. I began to keep my eyes on him from the moment I first saw him and watched him until the moment I passed by. And of course, when I didn't take my eyes off him, he didn't look back at me either. The side of the mystery man began to be seen little by little, and I noticed that it was no different from the other ordinary person. But I felt excited like a child who had just discovered the hidden treasure. Besides, it would be perfect if I see his backside last. I had already turned my head 180 degrees and looked back dangerously before I knew it. I couldn't see the back well, so I was trying to turn back, putting my hands off the steering wheel. Now the back of him was finally seen by my eyes. Being satisfied, I was about to exclaim, and at that moment, bang! Then I suddenly lost my mind. When I woke up again, I was lying in the hospital, and fortunately, I was not seriously hurt, though. What a stupid! Why did I do that? Was I possessed by something? While thinking about those things, a man in a police uniform knocked on the door of the room and came inside. Hi, I came here to hear what happened to you yesterday. So I frankly confessed that I had acted rashly to see the back of the man standing on the road and admitted that the accident had happened. I told him that I don't know why I suddenly thought so. Just then, the cop who was listening to me without saying anything said to me, and that one sentence that he had told me still remained in my head long after the incident. Since that day, I've been avoiding the road wherever I go to work or come back home. Shoot, that dude didn't take you this time.
A few years back, I was a shift manager for a local big box pharmacy and convenience store. It was right across my backyard, and I could probably sprint there in under a minute if I really wanted to, so it really worked out for me. I was in my late 30s. I worked out quite a lot, and while I was fit, I was still a smaller girl. Even though I was married, I would constantly get hit on and asked out. It was pretty flattering, but it always made me feel really awkward. Now, this particular store I worked at was in a really weird part of town. It was on the right side of town to attract the Karens, but close enough to the not-so-good side of town to attract the drug addicts, drunks, and psychopaths. Anyway, let me say that I'm not someone that gets scared easily. I've had someone high on meth crash their car into the side of the store, causing the back of our store to bend inward because we didn't carry pineapple juice. I had a man pick me up and throw me over his shoulder and start walking out the door with me, saying that I'd make a good wife. Yeah. That's one for another time. Anyways, it all started on a Sunday morning. I remember this because I was really busy building end caps and making cell signs. I was working with my favorite coworker, so the day was flying by and I was really bubbly this day. There was a man and his son that came into the store and they made a beeline for me. The man was probably just a little under 6 foot and he was skinny. The man had dreadlocks and a long skinny silver earring dangling from his ear. He also had this really tan trench coat that I found really odd because it was summer. Nonetheless though, I had then greeted them and asked if they needed some help. The man spoke with a really thick Jamaican accent, and he said that his GPS stopped working, and he wanted to see if we had any. I let out a really small laugh, thinking he was messing with me. No, that would be at Best Buy or something, but we do have a small section of electronics on this wall over here. I indicated the wall to the back of me.
Oh, thanks,
he said, taking a look but also keeping his eyes on me. Something about those eyes just really chilled me. He was speaking another language to his son, but I kept going on about my tasks for the day, and he would call me to help him, asking me questions about chargers and SD cards. I answered them, and then he started telling me how beautiful I was. Really awkwardly, I had thanked him.
"You must work out, yeah?"
he asked. Yeah, yoga mostly," I replied while getting more and more uncomfortable now. He made some more comments about my body, telling me how he loved my tattoos, and he was just really being a creep. I tried to stay polite though, and eventually I just walked away to do some more work. I started to avoid him, but he was still staring at me. The man had his phone out, and I kept hearing the shuddering of a camera. I went to the office to tell my other coworker that I thought the guy was taking my picture, and I was just really feeling uncomfortable. He then came out and watched over me. Shortly after my coworker came out, the man and his son then left. By the time the end of my shift came, I forgot about him. A few weeks later, I was up front ringing customers with a different coworker. We were crazy busy that day, but I was the manager on duty. After we got the line down, my coworker then handed me an envelope. What's this?" I asked her. "I don't know. Some man in dreadlocks told me to give it to you," she said. I took the envelope and I went into my office with it. Inside of the envelope were dozens and dozens of pictures of me. My heart sank. I had no idea that these were taken. Most of them were of me in the store while working. Some of me walking home, and some even with me and my daughter. I felt sick. There was also a note with it. It said something along the lines of,
"You're so beautiful. I'm in love with you. I'd be a much better husband than what you have now. Please give me a chance."
There was more to it, but it's in police evidence now. The guy really stupidly left his name and address. I then called our store manager as well as the police. They took our camera footage, my statement, and the pictures and letter. They told him that he really needed to stay away from me or the next time he's getting arrested and he's banned from the store. I was really relieved, but still really bothered by it. A few more weeks to about a month then went by. It was another really busy Sunday night. It was just myself as the manager on duty, and we had another coworker as my cashier. We were ringing things up together when I noticed a man staring at me. The man was tall with a medium build. He had dreadlocks and he had the same earring and long trench coat as the other man did. This man was really scary. His eyes were just cold and really dead and angry. It felt like they were staring right through my soul. He didn't have anything to purchase, just stood and stared. I tried to smile politely at him, then another wave of customers came. I got lost in helping everyone, but didn't see the man anymore. Even when things calmed down, I still didn't see him. I decided to go start facing the back of the store, and I told my coworker to call me if she needed me. As I was back there, I heard that Jamaican accent and all over. I looked up at the mirror to see that same scary man on the phone.
"Yeah, she's here. No, it's just one other girl here with her. I can grab her when she leaves. No problem."
I was absolutely horrified. He didn't see me, so I slowly made my way up to the front. I briefly tell my coworker what's going on and then call the police and store manager. The cops took him away. A few days later, a detective came to speak to me. The two men were brothers. They were abducting women and actually using them for human trafficking. He told me I was really lucky. I later found out that they had apparently found a woman beaten to death in their apartment. They've both since gone to prison. This still gives me really bad nightmares. What happened to that woman could have easily been me, but thank God it wasn't.
The events of the story take place over the course of a few nights. Before we get there, I need to provide a little bit of backstory. My husband and I had just moved to New York City, like right in the heart of the city. The apartment was breathtaking. I kept thinking that it was a loft apartment you would see in a movie or a television show. My husband was fortunate enough to land a well-paying job that allowed us to afford this beautiful apartment. My favorite part was the view. At night, you could see all the lights from the city out of the windows. It didn't take long for my husband to make some friends at work. He's a very social person, and being in sales for a decade makes it easy for him to strike up a conversation with anyone. Almost a year into living in the city, we had our weekend crew that we would hang out with routinely. We would have dinner, play games, or just have some drinks with Becky and Jim, as well as another couple, Jason and Liz. But my husband's best friend from the city was a man named Eric. Eric did not have a significant other, but never came alone. He always had a friend that he would bring. He would always joke with me and my husband, "Don't worry, guys. You never have to worry about me being the third wheel." This turned into a reoccurring joke, and Eric was almost referred to as this third wheel. One night after one of our little get-togethers, my husband and I were getting ready for bed. We talked for a while, but I'm pretty sure I fell asleep mid-sentence. I woke up at some point in the middle of the night. I didn't look at the time, but it was still dark, so before 5 a.m. if I had to guess. I heard a noise, and I know that it's what woke me up. I just laid in bed, feeling a bit uneasy, and looked up in the dark room. I thought I could see a figure of some kind in the corner of the room. The more I tried to focus, the more and harder it was to see. I felt as if though I could almost hear something, like breathing or wheezing. After a few minutes, I felt much better and chalked it up to some kind of vivid nightmare and rolled over back to bed. I was too scared in the moment to look and didn't want to wake my husband up for something that was probably just a giant overreaction. The next night came and same story. We went to bed at around 11. I didn't tell my husband about the events of the night before. Again, I was awoken in the middle of the night. This time I looked at the time and it was shortly after 4 a.m. I could for sure hear breathing this time. I looked around the room from the bed, but this time I couldn't see any figures like I did the night before. I could just hear the breathing and it felt so close. I tried waking up my husband, but he was out cold. I didn't try awfully hard because he had to wake up in about an hour for work. I didn't sleep well the rest of the night, and I woke up with him in the morning and did not want to stay in the bedroom alone when he left. I moved to the living room and slept on the couch for a couple of hours. The day was miserable. I couldn't shake the weird feeling for the entire day. Around 2 in the afternoon, I took a shower. When I turned the shower off and was drying my hair in the bathroom, I heard something from outside the bathroom door. I froze in paranoia in the bathroom and listened with my ear to the door, but heard nothing. Finally, I worked up the courage to leave the bathroom and felt a minor moment of relief when I was in fact still alone in the apartment. Shortly after 5, my husband came home from work and I told him about the events of the last 2 nights. At first he laughed as if though I were telling him a joke. Once he realized how freaked out I was, he then began to try and rationalize what I could have been seeing and hearing. I have to say, I was insulted because he even suggested that maybe I had too much to drink, but that was not the case whatsoever. He then said in a reassuring voice, "Listen, if it happens again, just wake me up, and I'll search the room." This actually did give me some relief that I was able to talk to him about it. However, I was still anxious that I would hear or see something again. That night came quickly, and I was so tired from the previous night that I fell asleep even though I was practically petrified to go to bed. Again, right around 3:30 in the morning, I woke up to the sound of breathing, and it was undeniable at this point. I looked around the room and saw nothing, just like the previous night. I woke up my husband and told him to listen. He said he could hear the breathing too. He sprang from the bed and turned on the light. There was thankfully nobody standing in the room. That brief moment of solace ended quickly when that nightmare came true. My husband walked over to the walk-in closet, and emerging from under the bed was our friend Eric. He sprinted towards my husband, who was now in the closet, and tackled him. I screamed in panic, absolutely freaking out. I jumped from the bed and tried to make a run for the door. My plan was to just yell in the hallway until someone hopefully heard me. I didn't even make it to the door before Eric had caught me. I screamed as loud as I could, and thankfully in that quick moment my husband sprang out and tackled Eric in return. I ran to the cell phone and called the police. My husband is a fairly large man and was able to get Eric to the ground and keep him there and subdue him until the cops showed up. To the police's credit, they showed up incredibly fast. My husband only had minor scrapes and bruises, but had a pretty big knot on his head. When the cops were arresting Eric, we could hear him saying, "I didn't want to be the third wheel anymore. I didn't want to be the third wheel anymore." What's even more disturbing is that he told the police he was inside of our apartment for a couple of days. He had somehow stolen my husband's key and made a copy of it. He was apparently breaking into the apartment for weeks, but had been staying during the night for the last few days. I'm not sure why he didn't try anything while we were sleeping or any of the times myself or my husband were alone in the apartment. It still freaks me out thinking that this man was inches from where I slept. We're now back in my hometown and not living in the city anymore. The terror you feel being trapped that high up in the sky with nowhere to run has made me extremely claustrophobic. You never know what people are capable of, even people you consider close friends. The police did inform us that Eric stated he didn't intend to hurt either one of us that night, but the look in his eyes told us a completely different story.
This happened to me about 6 years ago. I'm now 26, and I'm also married with two awesome kids. For some context, I'm a guy. This is what happened to me. I tried so many times to leave my ex-girlfriend, who we'll call Sarah. Whenever I would tell her that I wanted to see other people or that I should move out so that we have room to breathe, she would always go crazy and threaten to kill or cut herself or even drive her car off of a bridge. Mind you, where I live, there really isn't any bridges. Anyways, one day I run into my ex-girlfriend, who we'll call Rachel, at the mall. We ended on good terms, so we had actually talked like nothing happened. I had told Rachel about my situation with Sarah and how I really wasn't happy with her, and that I was really scared that she was going to do something to harm herself. Rachel told me if I was really worried that much, that I should let one of her family members know. So one day during work, I caught her on my lunch and told her we should have dinner and talk. I also ran to our place and got all of my things and my dogs and moved everything back into my parents' house. I know, that's really messed up. But you have to understand that she was crazy, like really crazy. When we went to dinner, I told her in public that we should break up because I just wasn't happy anymore. And to be honest, I really hadn't been for a while. I mean, we had been together for about 3 years, and I just wasn't happy. I had actually told her a few months after we started dating that I thought we were better off as friends. Anyways, so we break up, and I go back to my parents' house, which they really weren't happy about because they knew how she was, and they were really scared that she was going to do something to the house, or maybe even worse. They wanted me to go to a family member's house instead, but I mean, really. Who would actually take two big dogs and me on top of this giant load of drama? Later that night, when me and my dad are talking in the living room, all of a sudden we hear the sound of my truck alarm then go off and the sound of glass break. My heart sank. I just knew it was Sarah. I go outside calmly trying to talk to her like an adult, and she just starts hitting me and spitting in my face, telling me I'm a piece of crap and all these other crazy things. I kid you not, I didn't touch her not one time, and I never raised my voice. I tried to get her to relax and at the same time telling my dad everything was okay. I can handle this, just go back inside. Finally, after about a half hour of just getting hit and yelled at, she eventually leaves, peeling out of my parents' neighborhood. Let's fast forward a few days later. I end up getting a visit from the cops asking where I was the night of this night, and blah blah blah. You know how it goes. I tell them, but they don't believe me. They say that they want to take me downtown for some questions. Being the decent person that I am, I decide to go willingly. And, well, what do you know?
It turns out that she had filed a report on me saying that I beat her and also held her at gunpoint to get all of her money from her safe, and that I also wanted the PIN numbers to her card. For a while, I didn't even say anything because I was just so shocked at this point. I then tell the cops, "Look at me. I'm the one that has cuts and bruises here. She did that. I didn't do anything to her." Their response? "Sir, she's a lady. We have to hear her side on this, and we're going to need to take some DNA samples from you." Well, I give them what they need, and long story short, I'm thrown in jail waiting for a hearing. About 2 weeks go by, and the results came back. And you guessed it. Totally negative. Also, I forgot to mention this, but me and Rachel ended up getting back together, but the harassment never stopped. Sarah made it impossible for me to move on with my life. For almost a year, I would get constant visits from cops asking why I was stalking her. Sarah even hired a private investigator to follow me and Rachel around. Every time I got a visit from a cop, I always had something backing me up on where I was whenever Sarah claimed I was stalking her. She had 4 restraining orders filed against me when I never even had anything to do with her. Finally, the judge was sick of it. I guess he had finally seen just how crazy she was, because he didn't issue any more restraining orders after that. Me and Rachel almost didn't make it through this. Sarah made my life hell, but I'm really glad I ended things with her. So Sarah, wherever you are, I really hope you find the help you need. And I pray and hope no other man ever has to go through this.
For the past few weeks, me and my friend have been using the app Randonautica. One night recently, me and Daniel went to the movies. When the movie ended, it wasn't that late, so we came up with the idea to grab some food and use the app. We searched for a creepy location, and the app gave us a destination to drive to. The app was taking us to a quiet part of the highway. We had to pull over by an abandoned rest stop and walk the rest of the way because there were no roads heading into where the app was telling us to go. Me and Daniel walked towards the woods and climbed over an old rusty fence. We carried on walking into the woods with about 5 minutes left until we reached our destination. We came prepared and brought with us flashlights as we've been doing this often. We finally arrived to the location where the app was leading us to. And it led us to a cabin. It was hard to tell if someone was using this or it was left abandoned. Daniel asked if we should go inside and look around. I said, "I don't know. It could be someone's property." Daniel eventually convinced me to check it out. There weren't any cars around or lights in the cabin. And we were kind of in the middle of nowhere, so I agreed. We entered the cabin by going through the front door as it was unlocked. Just like the outside, the cabin looked abandoned, but also like someone had been living there. The downstairs was relatively normal. We went upstairs and there was only one room. We assumed it to be a bedroom, and after opening the door, we were right. The room was not normal, however. Someone had nailed pages from what I assumed was a Bible all over the walls and ceiling. Scattered on the floor were more Bibles and Bible pages that had been ripped out. If this wasn't creepy enough, there was a bag sitting on the bed. I looked inside and there was a small Bible, a box of matches, a large rusty pair of scissors, and a hammer that had blood on it. I showed Daniel what was in the bag, and he said we should probably leave. As we went downstairs, Daniel stopped me and told me to be quiet. After listening out carefully, we heard men talking in the near distance. Then I noticed, through the window, about 6 or 7 flashlights in the woods approaching the cabin. We quietly left through the front door again and started jogging back to where the car was. We hopped the fence and drove back home. That night, Daniel texted me with a picture of a news article that he had read that was posted 2 days ago. Man brutally murdered in his home. He was found with Bible pages stuffed in his hand. I keep thinking that those men by the cabin we found are responsible for that man's murder. And if we had been caught in their cabin, me and Daniel might have suffered the same similar fate.
I grew up in the Midwest, United States. During the 90s, my family lived in a tight-knit community, and we would often have get-togethers and barbecues with our neighbors. It was truly the American dream. My brother and I were very good friends with all the kids from our neighborhood, and whenever we'd have one of these gatherings, all the kids would get together for a game of manhunt. To avoid any of the back and forth of who would be chosen as the hider and the seekers, my brothers and I would usually volunteer to be the seekers. There was this giant forest area outside of our neighborhood where the games would take place. And since we would often go fishing with my dad around this area, we knew it pretty well. You could say we were all very competitive. I remember it was the 4th of July, 1996. The entire community threw a party at the neighborhood park. And of course, this meant that we kids were going to have our traditional game of manhunt, one of the biggest we've ever had, and it would take place after the fireworks show. By the time the fireworks stopped, I'd say it was around 9:30 p.m. Shortly after, we gathered everyone for a game and began around 9:45. Things started out like any other game. We caught most of the low-level hiders within the first 10 minutes. However, there were still some of the older kids hiding out in some of the more obscured areas of the park. We were always told never to go too deep into the woods. To give you some perspective, the park we were at was at the very back of our neighborhood. Beyond that was the forest that went on for about 3 miles before you got to the highway that led into town. There was no hunting allowed in this forest because of its proximity to residential areas. So we would often see a lot of deer and other animals roaming about. Anyways, the game went on for a while longer, and despite their best efforts, we apprehended most of the hiders, except for a girl who was about 8 years old. We'll call her Ashley. I found this to be very odd because Ashley wasn't the best hider. We made our way to the small lake besides the clubhouse. This was the last area we would check before letting someone know that we couldn't find Ashley. It was about this time that I began to feel this sinking feeling in my stomach. I was only 11 years old at the time, but I could tell there was something wrong. I distinctly remember seeing the moon reflecting brightly upon the surface of the water as we made our way around the lake. When we got to the far side of the lake, we started hearing a strange noise coming from within the trees. It sounded like someone was being brutally stabbed over and over again, but no screams were accompanying the awful sound. The three of us approached the tree line. When my brother pointed his flashlight into the trees, we saw a hooded figure with its back turned to us. They appeared to be kneeling down and stabbing at something with a large hunting knife. As soon as the beam of light fell upon the figure, it immediately stopped what it was doing and stood up. The next thing I remember is my oldest brother covering my eyes with his free hand and telling us to run back to the park. The three of us took off and ran towards the party. I remember hearing the sounds of thudding boots tearing through the bush behind us. And as soon as we got back to the party, my older brother told my dad about the man in the woods. The rest of the night is a blur to me. I only remember seeing the police showing up and me falling asleep in my dad's arms. The next morning, I was told that Ashley ended up leaving with her parents while the game was still going on, which explains why we couldn't find her. I didn't get a good look at what the hooded man had been stabbing at, but my brother told me it was a deer carcass. Looking back, I suppose we could just chalk it up to someone hunting in a restricted area. But there's still something that bothers me. What kind of person rapidly stabs at a dead deer in the dark? And even though he was nowhere to be seen by the time we got back to the party, I'm certain that he was chasing us, at least for a short distance. It makes me wonder what he would have done if he caught us. That was the very last game of manhunt our neighborhood ever played.
It happened when I was in middle school. One day my family decided to visit my mother's parents' house after a long time. The house was located in a rural area. There's a big road with a convenience store and a gas station around my grandparents' house. And down there in the middle is a small trail that takes a long walk to get there. It was located in the most isolated part of the village. So whenever I walked along the trail, All I could see was a bamboo forest or a large area of rice paddies, fields, and streetlights. And the streetlights are all worn out, so only a few of them are operating properly. As soon as we arrived, I greeted my grandparents and had a really nice and delicious meal with them. Well, it was pretty good then. The next evening, all the relatives gathered at my grandparents' house. My parents and others said that they were going to see the nightscape of the night sea with my grandparents. But at that time, my cousin and I weren't interested in that much, so we decided to stay at home. We were chatting for a while, and it suddenly started to rain. Then my mom called me to check the door and go to bed early, saying that they were going to stay the night in one of the relatives' houses because it was too late to go back. So we were sitting back and chatting and watching TV. Some kinds of that after checking if we locked the door well. After a while, my cousin kept pestering me, saying that he's hungry. I said, "Hey, would you like to go to buy some snacks together? There's a convenience store over there." "No, I'm scared to go out right now." Well, my cousin was such a coward boy. And in my case, I wasn't scared at all. I could walk at night or watch horror movies by myself. Eventually, I ended up coming out alone to get some snacks for him. Light drizzle was falling at that time, so I left the porch without an umbrella and stared at the trail. And at that very moment, I felt really weird. I got goosebumps at first. However, I soon ignored it and went straight to the convenience store to buy some snacks. I mean, everything was fine until then. As soon as I left the convenience store, the rain poured heavily. Holy crap, I should have brought an umbrella. Mumbling like that, I started to rush to the house. At that instant, the lightning suddenly flashed. Slowly frightened, I started running faster. When I reached the middle of the trail, I saw the muddy road and the broken streetlights. And something was dropping over the muddy road. I couldn't see it clearly because it was too dark around, but something like a pebble kept falling under the streetlights. And when I looked up at the streetlight, my heart literally sank. I saw a silhouette of a person hanging upside down on a streetlight and holding on its column. It was a woman, and she was hanging like a monkey. You know what I mean. I was so surprised that I couldn't try to run away. Just stared blankly at her. At that moment, there was another flash of lightning, and every time it flashed, the woman's face was clearly seen. Her crying face, smiling face, and a face with no expression. Looking at that face, my body was cold and stiff. I couldn't move my legs at all. The lightning stopped soon, and I couldn't see the woman anymore because the surrounding of the trail was dark again. I then started screaming and rushing toward home. It was then... She was laughing out loud. "Shoot, if I turn around, she'll kill me, for sure." I ran like a crazy person. And when I got to the house, I screamed, hitting the front door with my body. My cousin came out, opened the door, and asked me if I saw a ghost or something. But I couldn't tell him what I saw because I was afraid he might be scared. I was thinking if I should call my parents to come over quickly. But somehow, I didn't think they would believe me. So I just thought I might have seen something wrong, and eventually decided to sleep like that. But I couldn't sleep well that night. I kept feeling weird. There was a bamboo forest right next to the window in the room, and the sound of bamboo leaves hitting the window was so creepy. Feeling uncomfortable, I turned to the window. And there was someone else. Someone was standing by the window looking inside our room. I couldn't scream again. Covering myself with blanket, I was shivering and thinking I shouldn't move. But then I heard a strange sound of a song. I didn't know exactly what song he was singing, but his trembling voice gave me goosebumps enough. It has been singing like that for a while, and then it started knocking on the window. "Open the door." It was neither a woman nor a man. "Knock, knock, open the door. Knock, knock, open the door." It kept talking like that in a deep, low voice, But suddenly...
Open the door!
It was howling in an extremely high voice, and soon the voice was turning into laughter. I recognized that the laugh was exactly the same voice I heard when I'd run off the trail a few hours ago. I had no choice but waited for the sound to disappear. And I guess I fell asleep so faintly. The next morning, I woke up to the sound of the phone ringing. At first, I was even afraid about the sound of a ringtone, so I didn't come out from my blanket until Mom and the other adults came back. After a few hours, my cousin suddenly approached me and said like this, "Hey, did you hear anything strange last night?" To my surprise, my cousin also heard that weird song, knocking sound, and the laughter yesterday. So, it was not a dream. At first, we were planning to stay one more day, but I begged my parents to go back home and I could come home right away that day. What the heck was that thing I saw on the trail that day? Do you think it followed me? Well, it's still a mystery that hasn't been solved to this day.
This happened when I was in college. One day, I decided to sleep at my friend's house. After having fun eating takeout with my friend and chatting for a while, we both laid down to sleep. Then I suddenly started hearing the sound of a wooden percussion that is typically used in Korean temples. However, as my friend and I were sincere Buddhists, I just laughed and then fell asleep, thinking it was a hallucination. About a month later, I met her again at a cafe near her house, and I made a joke. "Hey, did you turn on the Buddhist broadcast at your house that day? I kept hearing the sound of a wooden instrument when I slept over at your house." Then my friend suddenly looked serious and asked me if I heard it, and she abruptly called her mother, trembling. "Hey, Mom, my friend heard it too. What should I do now?" In confusion, I asked what was going on, and my friend suddenly cried and said, "I keep experiencing sleep paralysis ever since I started living in that house. I've been suffering this for 5 months, not 1 or 2 days. I can't live like this anymore." She then confessed that she'd been staying at a nearby motel. It was fine at first, but she started to have sleep paralysis more and more, even when she was in the motel. I was so surprised when she told me this. To reassure her, I told her to pack up right away, check out of the motel, and come to my house. Then she cried even harder this time. And she said she's too scared to enter that house by herself. She asked me to go with her, so we took a taxi and went back to her house. However, the moment I went into her house, I thought I was going to cry too, and I was sure that something was wrong. As soon as I opened the door, I suddenly smelled rotten water. My friend had a goldfish at the time, and there wasn't even a drop of water left in the fish tank. The fish was dried up and laid there dead. We ran out of the house without even thinking about packing her stuff up. We didn't go back to my house right away. Instead, we wandered around the crowded streets for a long time before returning. When we finally returned to my house, we both sat on my bed, thinking for a long time about what we had to do, and then fell asleep. When I woke up the next morning, I noticed that there were several missed calls from my mom. When I called her back, she asked me, "Are you at home with someone right now?" "Why, Mom?" I asked her, almost crying out of fear. And then she told me about her dream. In her dream, a tall, skinny, and abnormally big-eyed man was looking through my window in black clothes. "Why isn't she coming out? Why? 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 Why?" He muttered this while watching me. Mom ran towards him shouting, "What are you doing?" Then she suddenly woke up from her dream. So I was honest and confessed to my mom about my friend's house, and she told me not to go anywhere with her. She lived in my house for about a month. One of her mother's relatives was a shaman, and she suddenly got mad when she talked about her daughter, and then advised my friend to stay close to me. I think her house might have been possessed by a ghost. I thought about why he couldn't come inside my house. I guess it's because my mom bought some ceremonial salt before I moved into this house. And one of my relatives, who was a monk, once visited my house to pray for me while I was away. Maybe that's why. My friend later told me that she had moved out of the house, and the owner actually accepted her request without any complaints. I think cheap houses like those always have a legitimate reason. And fortunately, she's doing very well now.
My father's grandmother once told him a story of a man from the 1900s in Mexico that had a very heart-stopping experience. Said man, let's call him Jose, a very common Mexican name, loved to drink. So he and one of his friends are finishing drinking at a local bar one night. When they leave the bar, they say their goodbyes and go their separate ways for the evening. As I stated before, it's Mexico in the 1900s. For most people, you either traveled by your own 2 feet or by horse. Luckily for Jose, he had a horse. So off he went, back to his home late at night, taking the dirt trails. Along the way, he passes under a bridge. As he comes out the other side, he begins to hear what sounds like a child crying. He stops and gets off his horse. He looks in the direction of the crying. He soon finds the source of the crying. It's a little boy crying all alone. He asks the child if he's all right.
I'm lost. Can you help me?
Jose, of course, agrees to help the little boy, so he picks him up and places him on the rear of the saddle. He gets back on, and then they're on their way. As they travel along, Jose feels the little kid poke his back a few times. So Jose asks what's the matter. The young boy responds,
Daddy, Daddy, look.
I grew teeth.
When Jose looks back, he's face to face with a horrifying sight. What was once a little boy now sat a dark figure with rows of sharp, long, white teeth, smiling at him, with a pair of eyes that radiated death itself. Turning white with fear, Jose's only reaction was to pull back the reins of the horse, which causes the horse to fall backwards. Luckily, he didn't get caught in the middle and just fell off the back. Jose wasted no time getting up and looking for his horse, but unfortunately, the horse had been spooked and ran off into the night. Jose proceeded to do the same and hightail it out of there, not even daring to test his luck. He didn't look back. The following day, when his friend asked to go for some drinks, he said only a little, because he didn't want to stay too late.
Son, we need to talk about internet safety. I slowly crumpled down onto the floor next to him. His laptop was open and he was playing Minecraft. Comments scrolled down the side of the screen in a chat box and I could see his eyes were locked into the action. Son, can you stop your game for a minute? He then closed the laptop and looked up at me. Dad, is this going to be another cheesy, scary story? What? I faked hurt feelings for a second. Then I grinned at him. I thought you liked my tales. He grew up listening to my stories about children who encountered witches, ghosts, werewolves, and trolls. And like many generations of parents, I use scary stories to reinforce morals and teach lessons about safety. Single dads like me should use all the parenting tools at their disposal. They were fine when I was 6, but now that I'm getting older, they don't scare me anymore. If you're going to tell a story about the internet, can you make it really, really scary? I squinted at him incredulously, and he folded his arms and said, Dad, I'm 10 and I can handle it. Okay, I'll try. I began. Once upon a time, there was a boy named Colby. He sighed deeply. It was sure that his expression indicated that he wasn't impressed by the introduction. I continued. Colby went online and joined several children's websites. After a while, he started talking to other kids in-game and on the message boards. He made friends with another 10-year-old boy named Helper23. They liked the same video games and shows, they laughed at each other's jokes, and they explored new games together. After several months of friendship, Colby gave Helper23 six diamonds in a game they were playing. This was a very generous gift. Colby's birthday was coming up, and Helper23 wanted to send him a cool present in real life. And Colby figured it wouldn't hurt to give Helper23 his home address, as long as he promised not to tell it to any strangers or grown-ups. Helper23 swore he wouldn't tell anyone else, not even his own parents, and set about mailing the package. I paused the story and asked my son, "Do you think that was a good idea?" "No," he said, shaking his head vigorously. In spite of himself, he was getting into the story. Well, neither did Colby. Colby felt guilty about giving away his home address, and his guilt began to grow. By the time he put on his pajamas the next night, his guilt and fear were larger than anything else in his life. He resolved to admit the truth to his parents. The punishment would be steep, but it was worth it to have a clear conscience. He squirmed in his bed as he waited for his parents to tuck him in. My son knew the scary part was coming up. He leaned forward, wide-eyed, and I spoke quietly and deliberately. He heard all the noises of the house. The washing machine bounced around in the laundry room. Branches scraped against the brick outside his room. His baby brother cooed in the nursery. And there were some other noises he couldn't quite pinpoint. Finally, his dad's footsteps echoed down the hall. "Hey, Dad!" he called out nervously. "I have something to tell you." His dad stuck his head in the doorway at a weird angle. In the darkness, his mouth didn't seem to move, and the eyes were all wrong. "Yes, son?" The voice was way off, too. "Are you okay, Dad?" he asked. "Uh-huh," sung the father in his strangely affected voice. Colby pulled his covers up defensively. Is Mom around?" "Here I am." Mom's head popped into the doorway below Dad's, and her voice was an unnatural falsetto. "Were you about to tell us that you gave our home address to Helper23? You shouldn't have done that. We told you to never give out personal information on the internet," she continued. "He wasn't really a kid. He just pretended to be one. Do you know what he did? He came to our house, broke in, and murdered both of us, just so he could spend some time with you." A fat man in a wet jacket emerged in the doorway holding the two severed heads. Colby shrieked and gasped as the man dropped the heads on the ground, unsheathed his knife, and moved into the room to work on the boy. My son screamed too. He twisted his hands defensively over his face. But we were just getting started with the story. After several hours, the boy was almost dead, and his screams had become whimpers. The killer noticed the wailing of a baby in another room and removed his knife from Colby. He had never murdered a baby before and was excited about the prospect. Helper 23 left Colby to die and followed the cries through the house. In the nursery, he walked to the crib, picked the baby up, and held it in his arms. He moved towards the changing table to get a better look. But as he held the baby, the crying died down. On the contrary, he looked up and smiled. Helper 23 had never held a baby, but he gently bounced it in his arms like a pro. He wiped his bloody hands on the blanket so he could stroke the baby's cheek. "Hey there, sweet little guy." His beautiful rage of sadism melted into something warmer and softer. He walked out of the nursery, took the baby home, named him William, and raised him as his very own. After I finished the story, my son was visibly shaken. "But Dad, my name's William," he stammered. I gave him a classic dad wink and tussled his hair. "Of course it is, son." William ran up the stairs to his bedroom in a fury of sobs. I think he liked my story.
2 years ago, when I was 19 back then, we just moved to a new house. It was newly built, and although it's not that big size, but at least we were satisfied that we have our own house. One day, it was on a rainy night, and I was walking alone in the dark street. Because it was almost midnight, there were no vehicles at all at the time. I was returning home from my friend's house nearby, where it was her birthday on that day. While I was walking, I felt like something, someone, was behind following me. However, when I looked back, there was just an empty street. I felt strange. But I was feeling relieved because I was already in front of our main door. Then the incident suddenly happened. As I tried to grab a key in my purse, a stranger held on my wrist. It was a guy, and he definitely didn't look normal at all. He had a big grin on his face, and his big and red eyes were bulging out. When I looked around, there was no one else on the street. Considering it was in the middle of the night, it was no wonder. I got panicked. I grabbed my wrist and tried to kick him, screaming out. Then he laughed and let go of me, and I banged on the door and shouted as loud as I could, "Help! Help me! Open the door!" My dad quickly opened the door. Still crying, I shouted and explained what just had happened, but when I looked back, there was no one there. I couldn't sleep at all that night. The morning after that night, I was trying to calm down myself just watching TV. There was a news about a murder case. The victim was a girl, the same as my age, and the police just found her body in front of her house's main door. Also, her wrist was cut by some sharp thing. The blood was all over her face, and there was a note behind it. She didn't try to fight back, so I killed her. It was written like this with a smiley face. My heart dropped, that is for sure. It must be the same guy who I met yesterday. What if I didn't resist? What if I didn't shout a scream for help? And what if no one opened the door? It is said to be the man is still wanted. To tell the truth, I just don't want to meet that guy in my neighborhood. Never, ever again.
My name is Paul. I play a lot of video games with my group of friends. Recently, we've been playing Among Us most nights. Every time my friends and I play video games together, we always use our mics, and a lot of times, we just trolled other players. We were playing Among Us and had a lot of discussions about who the killers could be. Me and my two friends, whose names were Harry and Wayne, thought it was the guy named Sean, and so did the rest of the lobby. We eventually voted him to be ejected. During the discussions, Sean was getting more and more aggressive, insisting it wasn't him who was the killer. And me and my two friends actually found it quite funny. After the game, Harry had received a message from a guy named Sean saying he wasn't the killer, and we shouldn't have ejected him, and so on. Wayne thought it would be funny to invite Sean into our lobby to troll him the whole game, and tell the rest of the players in the discussion that we think Sean's the killer. So that's what we did. We played the two games with the Sean guy, each time trolling him and saying that he was the killer and getting him ejected. Sean eventually left our lobby, and we didn't play with him again that night. I'm a light sleeper and wake up to the slightest of sounds. I woke up around 2 a.m. by the sound of a car. I looked out my window and I saw a car parked just outside my house. The car was still running, but no one got out, no one got in the car. I looked around and saw my street to be empty. Just before trying to go back to sleep, my computer started up. I went over to my computer and there was a blue screen. In the middle of the blue screen was an icon that said, "Open for discussion." I clicked on it and it revealed a very gory photo of a man who was cut in half. And underneath was written, "You have been ejected." I tried to move the mouse and turn off my computer, but it didn't work. The only thing to do was to look at the gruesome photo. My computer did turn off eventually, and as soon as it did, that car that was outside my house slowly drove off. The next day I woke up and saw a text from my friends Harry and Wayne, and they both said they had similar experiences that they received weird pictures on the computer and phones, pictures of people cut in half. I asked them both if they think it was something to do with that guy we were trolling. They both didn't know what to think. I thought that Sean guy somehow found out where we lived and hacked our devices. What scares me is how real the photos were, and how he knew where me and my friends lived. and was able to hack our devices so easily.
All right, y'all, that is my time. Thank y'all for tuning into the show. I hope y'all enjoyed y'all stuff. We got a few ears in here and there. But join me in tomorrow, next time, same place. But before I get out of here, you know I have to leave y'all with the thought of the night. And the thought of the night is this. Someone who hates you normally hates you for one of three reasons. They either see you as a threat, they hate themselves, or they want to be you. And if they want to be you, make sure that it's the part of you that they can't touch. So with that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before y'all lay. I love y'all. And good night.